The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach, the show that helps your business find opportunities, manage risks, and develop strategies for winning in world markets. My guest today is a woman I've admired for years. She has been cited as one of the 100 most inspiring people in the clinical R&D industry. She's an entrepreneur who created a truly global multi-million dollar company that is now the leader in its field, and we are going to find out how she did it. My guest is Bonnie Brescia, who in 1983 with Joan Bockenheimer founded BBK Worldwide, first of its kind marketing consultancy in patient recruitment for clinical trials in the pharmaceutical, biopharma, and medical device industries. They are changing the face of patient recruitment around the world. And we'll add that my company, Global Reach, is a member of BBK's Patient Recruitment Global Alliance. Bonnie, welcome to Global Reach.
Thanks, Tay. Pleasure to be here.
As you know, I've been dying to get you on the show for a year. Really thank you for coming on. So tell the audience, what's the core of BBK Worldwide? Can you give our listeners an idea of your company?
Well, essentially, as you've said, we work in the pharmaceutical and biopharmaceutical markets, and we help them to accelerate the timelines to test new medicines and treatments. We help them to identify the patients who will participate in clinical research studies, the doctors who treat them, and the regions of the world in which most participants can be found.
Bonnie, how did this all start? How did you and Joan come together?
We had been working together for actually a short period of time, only about a year, at another public relations company. And we took a look at how that business was structured and what we wanted to do, and basically decided we could do more of what we wanted to do if we went out on our own.
Was that also in the healthcare field, the PR firm?
Yes, it was broader. It was health, it was fitness, it had a number of products. So that was one of the key pieces. Could we be very focused in the healthcare marketplace?
So with entrepreneurs, it seems to me there's usually an aha moment where you identify a real business need. What was the market need that you and Joan saw that gave you the impetus to start the business?
You know, the primary impetus was really more of a personal note, and then the market piece came second. The aha moment was saying, if she can make money doing this, we can make money doing this.
Hmm.
And then when you ask it from the market perspective, it really was acknowledging that the healthcare marketplace had value. And it wasn't a very interesting or attractive marketplace back in 1983.
Why not?
Well, just prior to that, the guidelines or the culture was that physicians could not market their products and services directly to consumers. And in the late 70s, the American Medical Association sort of changed its position on that and said if hospitals can do that, then physicians can do that. And it really changed the marketplace and allowed for advertising and public relations and other communications disciplines to step up.
So what was the business model back in 83? And then, you know, how did you change it?
Well, our model was very much a consultancy with creative components. We also did a lot of work in fundraising and donor relations. But what was different about us at the time was a philosophy that all forms of communications could be integrated and needed to be integrated when you were talking about communicating with patients.
In what way?
And that was, I mean, that was heretical at that time that you could integrate advertising and PR, which seems funny now because most major universities will issue degrees in integrated marketing or in healthcare communications.
Interesting. So, yeah, I remember back then you had, there were PR agencies, there were ad agencies, and they were separate companies.
Even if they had a shared ownership, there was a philosophy that said you don't take the same clients because you might cannibalize the revenues. And they wanted different companies to hire them for those different disciplines.
So, I mean, as you were setting up the business, you and Joan, what were the key questions that you looked at when you structured the company?
We looked at what was in the best interest of the ultimate consumer that we were going to be servicing, and that was patients. We looked at what did we want our company to feel like. Could there be an integration of our great desire to be parents and fully engaged family members, as well as fully engaged and successful business entrepreneurs. And so those were really the conversations that we were having at that time. Could we treat people better than we had been treated in all the other jobs that we had worked in? And we knew that if people felt respected, that would be a driver for innovation and satisfaction and the clients feeling more satisfied as well.
Interesting. I'll get back to that in a minute, but before we go any further, I want to give our audience a little more of an idea of who they're listening to. So Bonnie Bressy is an absolute pioneer in the field of patient recruitment. She's been there for more than 30 years, and she's actually helped shape the discipline. She continues to be well-recognized and highly sought-after thought leader in the field. Bonnie co-authored a book, Reinventing Patient Recruitment, Revolutionary Ideas for Clinical Trial Success, and I'm going to ask her what some of those ideas are a little bit later. And she regularly contributes to industry publications and speaks at conferences. Bonnie shares her passion for advancing medical science through leading, speaking about, and training on recent advancements and innovations around the world. She serves on numerous boards, and women are so underrepresented on boards, including BioBridges, a clinical staffing company, the Charles River School, Middlesex Savings Bank, and Groundswell International. She is the mother of two daughters and mentor to many young professionals. Bonnie is committed to equal opportunities for diverse perspectives in business and community life, and that is more than just words on paper. That is words in action. So, Bonnie, talk about treating staff well as a driver for the business. Can you go into that a little bit more? What did you do differently?
That's a great question. I think, first, we believed that you needed balance in your life. And so many consultancies are really based on the billable hour. And we wanted to take another perspective on that and really focus on the deliverable and the quality of the deliverable. So if you weren't pushing people for the maximum number of hours you could get out of them in a week, you really had an opportunity to engage them in what's the best way to solve a client's problem. What's the most interesting thing?
I like that. Makes so much sense.
One of the other things that we continue to do 30-some-odd years later is look people in the eye and say, what is it that you want to do in your career? Is there something specific that you'd like to try? And I cannot tell you, Tay, the number of things, the number of times that one young man or young woman's goal became a whole new product area for us.
Can you give us an example?
We have, you know, in many cases, the global expansion is tied to that, where someone will come in and say, there's so much going on in the Japanese market, and it's so isolated from the global market in the field of clinical research. Should we open a company there? Can we look into that in more detail? And we did. We had a young man who'd interned for us while he was in college, and he was moving to Japan to teach. And he said on his way out, would you be open to having a business in Japan when I'm done with this assignment? I said, write me a business plan. And he did.
Wow.
And we opened a subsidiary. I mean, there have been other smaller examples where someone would say, I really want to do streaming radio as an advertising tactic. What do you think? And we usually say, go for it.
That's marvelous. Let me ask you, back in the 80s, women entrepreneurs were rare. And a lot of challenges, really basic challenges, funding, for example. How did you and Joan put together the wherewithal to start the company? I know banks eager then to lend to women.
Well, two things come to mind. When you're working in the communications field, and public relations at that time, and in many ways still does, has this second-class citizenship within the field of marketing. So people would assume if you were women and you were doing something in the communications discipline, you worked at home on your kitchen table and you pulled out a typewriter, because we didn't have desktop computers back in that day. And, you know, so you were immediately dismissed. And as, you know, as you mentioned...
I know.
The banking relationships and funding was the toughest. So we started our business with a personal loan, $30,000. And it's kind of funny, we put $10,000 of it immediately in the bank and said, let's never spend that. We took another $10,000 and we said, this is going to be our operating budget and make sure we get paid until we can, get up and running. And then the third $10,000, we said, this is our tangible asset. We bought a big word processor and a printer, a number of typewriters, and some old desks that were sort of extra military desks. And that's how we started.
Now, you're also in an industry that was pretty much, as many of them were, pretty much old boys network. How did you convince the old boys to let you in, or how did you get through the old boys network to get in?
You know, we recognized early on that was an unlikely outcome, no matter what kind of energy we put against it. So we chose not to. We said, let's just put our best efforts into our business. Let's focus on our customers and, you know, after 31, 32 years, it sort of happens. It's just the longevity. Another way of saying it is, I guess we just had to get old, and then it didn't matter if we were boys or girls.
Well, let's say, how did you get around then the old boys network to get to the clients and start establishing those critical client relationships?
I do think that it helped we were in healthcare because, as I said earlier, it wasn't a very attractive market in 1983, 84, 85. And so there wasn't a lot of competition from the, you know, male run and started advertising in PR agencies.
You mentioned one of the other key challenges for women entrepreneurs, and that's balancing work and family, especially with young children. Now, sounds like you found a way to be really considerate to your employees, but as an entrepreneur, that demands an enormous amount of time and energy, as do children. How did you structure BBK to meet both needs for you and Joan? Sometimes the entrepreneur is kinder to the employees than they are to themselves.
That's worth thinking about again after this discussion.
It's still an issue.
Pardon?
I said, it's still an issue for so many women.
It is, but it's also an issue for men. And we looked at it and said, well, what does balance mean to us? And it didn't necessarily mean a 40-hour work week. You can't start a business. You know, you can't. We were working sometimes 80 hours or 100 hours. But once the kids came along, we had to say, you know what, I may not get in until 10 o'clock on so many days a week, depending on what's happening with the kids. But when I'm in, I'm 100% committed. And that concept of commitment, we learned really early on that the people who were ambivalent about being parents and working were really ambivalent about both sides of that equation.
Huh.
They weren't positive they wanted to be parents, and they weren't positive they wanted to be working. And so what we identified going forward is people who know how to make commitments, know how to make those commitments work and to put them in balance.
We've got to go to break now. When we come back, I want to talk about a little bit the other side of women entrepreneur. We talked about the challenges, but I want to talk a little bit about what are the traits, the feminine qualities you think that helped make you and Joan successful entrepreneurs. But we'll do that in about 2 minutes. Don't go away.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional bankers' hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home. It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network. You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the second segment of Global Reach, Winning in World Markets. I'm here with my special guest, Bonnie Brescia, the co-founder of BBK Worldwide, and we're talking about entrepreneurship, growing a global company, and some of the challenges of being a woman entrepreneur. Bonnie, when we went to break, we were starting to talk about the challenges of being a woman entrepreneur, and I wanted to ask you about what qualities you think make a woman successful as an entrepreneur. Earlier this year, I interviewed John Gersimo, who's the author of The Athena Principle, How Women and Men Who Think Like Them Will Rule the World. And he and his co-author surveyed 64,000 people in 13 countries. They took one group and asked them what traits they valued, and the other half and asked them whether those traits were associated with men or women. So which traits associated with women do you think make them successful entrepreneurs and successful leaders in companies?
I think at the top of my list would be the quality of listening. As young girls, as young women, we are taught to listen before we speak. And when you're in the marketing discipline, listening to the marketplace, to the customers, our customers and their customers, is a critical first step. You're involved in market research. I think you can appreciate that concept.
Absolutely. And in interviewing people.
Exactly.
That's really interesting.
The other quality that worked for us, and I'm not sure that it would work in businesses that are not as dependent on creativity, but this idea of nurturing, that we wanted to come to know our colleagues in ways that, you know, would help us to respect them, to understand their stories, what was important to them in defining balance. And for many of these people, the balance wasn't having children. It was being performers or singer-songwriters, for example. It was being exceptional tennis players. Those are, you know, those are a couple of examples of things that became, that were important to people. And so nurturing them and going to some of these concerts or other events was, I think, something that we did as women that we might not have done as male entrepreneurs.
You know, I've been working with your company for 9 years now. I just realized that. And in that time, a lot of the people I met when we first started are still there. Mm-hmm. Do you find that you tend to keep a very stable staff?
You know, it either becomes the place for you to build your career at BBK, or it is a stepping stone. So the people who aren't going to be a good fit learn it very quickly. And the people who find it a terrific fit stay for many, many years. Our management team, they're averaging about 20 years with the company.
Wow. A lot of your staff below the management level who've been there at least 9 years, as far as I can tell.
Yep, then that would be sort of the emerging team. And I think that's, you know, that's an important part of being a women-owned business, is also looking at the evolution of people and how do you distribute responsibility and accountability over time and empower people to step up.
Looks really very, very interesting. I want to shift now to the other side, which is, how did you empower BBK to go global? I know you started at a time when the pharma industry, the biopharma industry, was just beginning to globalize its operations.
And you and Joan really took BBK global. So how did you decide to do it? And then let's go over how you actually did it, because it's tough going from a one-country firm to a multi-country firm.
You've got that right, Tay. But when you look at our marketplace of biopharmaceutical industry and the medical device industry as well, so many of the top companies are headquartered outside the United States. And we found as we were building our products and services that the people who were working on clinical research on the front lines didn't have the same understanding of what the requirements of their businesses were as you would see in the senior management team. So we needed to go where the senior management team were to help them appreciate the benefits of partnering with a company like BBK Worldwide.
As you entered new markets, how did you do it? Did you put your own people in place? Was it the joint venture route?
We actually started with some market research, and we evaluated, do we build it ourselves, do we acquire companies, or do we partner with different firms? And we chose the latter because we knew we needed expertise in the healthcare communications discipline in each of the major markets we wanted to pursue.
Healthcare can be so national, even within...
Yeah, and the regulations are national as well. So the kind of outreach and communications that you can do in England would be very different than what you would see in Italy and the United States. There's been more harmonization over the last 10 years, but it still remains a very nationally focused priority.
Yeah, I know when we're doing research for you, it is very different one country to another, even within the EU.
Absolutely.
How did you find your partners? What criteria did you use when selecting partners?
Initially, we wanted companies that had expertise in healthcare communications and working for the pharmaceutical industry. We knew there were no global or even internationally based patient recruitment and clinical trial support companies that were not doing the actual research studies. So we looked for people who had expertise and experience. And we identified five different nations where we believed we needed to go first.
And do you remember which those were?
Yes. We were looking in Germany, the UK, Switzerland, Italy, and South Africa.
Last one is a surprise. Why South Africa? And the others I get...
Pardon?
I mean, the others I would have almost reeled off because of where major pharma companies are, but South Africa surprised me. As it's not a usual first choice for companies, particularly a couple of decades ago.
No, and it's still true that it is not a hotbed of pharmaceutical companies' headquarters, but it was an increasingly important location for research to be done. And because of that, we knew we needed to have people feet on the street in South Africa. So we went to each of these countries, and we had a list of usually three or four different firms, and we met with them and talked with them. And it really was, by the time we got to the second country, clear that cultural fit was going to be the most important driver.
Fit with their culture, or fit with the national culture, or fit with the BBK culture?
Fit with the BBK culture, because what's important about patient recruitment in clinical research is your ability to move quickly, to be dynamic, to try new things. And when you look at some of the really big regional offices of international marketing companies, they can't move that quickly.
I will say DBK does put a premium on moving quickly. I still remember the first assignment I did for you. We had to come back to you with a quote on doing research in 45 countries overnight.
We gave you overnight.
Yes. And none of my colleagues in the company I used to work for when I mentioned wanted to touch it. Well, I said, gee, that's fun. And I was up all night calling around the world.
We also have fun. and we like our partner companies to have fun, and we really like them to make money. So in the beginning, we structured it as our obligation to teach these partners about our special discipline, and we hired them. There was no expectation that they were going to deliver revenue and customers back to us. And we continued that way for a good 7 or 8 years before we said, okay, you now know enough to be the generator of potential opportunities and customers in your countries or in your regions.
So how many partners do you have around the world roughly, or in how many countries?
Over time, we established a hub-and-spoke model where we have 4 primary alliance partners that are in the global area, and then each of them has supporting members in our alliance. So we have a primary office in Germany where we have 3 co-employed professionals, and out of Germany they support us in about 12 different countries in Europe. So they serve as the management team, and then there's sort of spokes out there of other partners in other countries throughout the EU. China and Japan, and we also have that kind of relationship with a company that's headquartered in Australia but serves the Southeast Asian nations, and has just opened an office in England to support their growing customer base.
Do you all meet every year or every couple of years? I mean, do you have meetings among the partners face-to-face? I mean, how do you manage? This is always a challenge. How do you manage and keep alignment within such a diverse group of partners?
We do meet annually with everyone. And we also meet probably more like quarterly with each of the individual partners. Their core people, who are our project managers, come to our headquarters outside of Boston for 2 to 3 weeks every year for training and updated training on product and service expansion. And then in each company, there's an individual who is our primary project manager for client activities, and another one who is our primary business development and marketing lead.
How does global expansion change your industry?
Before we went global and got very comfortable with that, there was the perception that you couldn't use U.S.-type communications techniques and strategies anywhere but in the U.S. People really believed that the regulations in their countries prohibited them from reaching out to potential study participants. We did the research and the work and the conversations to come to appreciate that that was not true, that it was really driven more by the customer's project team's nervousness about going outside of their comfort zone. And so we worked hard for many years to get the marketplace to be more comfortable and have a better appreciation of how the full integrated marketing disciplines could be applied to patient recruitment.
How has it changed patient recruitment and I would guess also investigator recruitment? Well, how's it different now?
It's all about now patient centricity and starting with the patient's perspective and determining what the messages and the media and the countries are when you begin your work from the perspective of a particular patient with a disease for whom clinical research might be the best option.
Very, very interesting. On that note, we again have to go to break. I can't believe how fast this is going. When we get back, I would like to talk about how you do this global-local challenge. In other words, you're managing global projects, but you're dealing with multiple cultures, multiple languages. Even within a country, you can have multiple cultures. I also want to find out how, as you've gone international, how the challenges of being a woman business owner have changed. But we've got to go to break now. We'll get into that when we come back from break. Don't go away. Bonnie and I will be here in about 2 minutes.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
What do business and sports have in common? Both are based on competition, and the goal of each is the same: to win. If you're in business, you need an edge over your competitors. You need to innovate and improve. You need to make adjustments to stay ahead of your competition. Tune in to The Business Locker Room with Kelly Riggs. Get the playbook and the coaching you need to improve your business performance. The Business Locker Room airs live every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to the final segment of Global Reach, Winning in World Markets. I'm your host, Tay Revez, and I am here with Bonnie Brescia, and we are talking about women entrepreneurs and how you take your company going, take your company global, and how you manage what is beginning to be a very large global company. But Bonnie, when we went to break, you're in the communication business, you're in the recruitment business, you are managing global projects, but you also have to communicate often in dozens of languages with all kinds of cultures. How do you handle that? How do you go about getting the right message to the right patient and doctor?
Well, that was a core consideration as we decided to how we would go global and using the partners in these major markets so that they had an understanding of, lived in the cultures, and were native speakers. In addition, we have people who represent, I think, 19 different countries that are on staff here in the United States. And we have 20-some-odd languages that also are spoken by the people in the U.S. office. So that really helps to make the connection on a very personal level. And that's one of the critical decision points in hiring people. You will have an advantage being hired by BBK if you are multilingual.
Now, I know you do the research in-country, you do, and you test the messaging, because we've done focus groups for you in about a dozen or more countries, sometimes at the same time. So how do you tailor the message to the culture and yet have a consistent recruiting message?
Let's go back to where we started, about listening and making a commitment to understand the end beneficiary of the message, which in this case is individuals with some kind of health concern who need to learn about clinical research and then consider participating in clinical research as part of their healthcare plan. So you can get it right in terms of cultural fit if you start from that perspective of understanding what drives people. And as you said, it's all about message. When we come in to help a customer that's been struggling, they're usually using the right techniques and tactics. They're saying the wrong thing. So I think you pick up on the critical concept there.
How do you take this listening quality, listening strategy, and how has that helped you as a woman going into these different cultures? Because I suspect that as you've expanded internationally, you now face different challenges being a female business owner.
Yeah, that's a nice flip on the coin of what we were talking about earlier when I said that being good listeners is one of the advantages of a female entrepreneur. When you're working internationally, there's an even greater expectation still that you will listen and not contribute. And so that's a real challenge. You've been in business for 20, 25 years, and the idea of not being the expert or not contributing is challenging. I think the challenges of being a female entrepreneur are greater in international markets than they even were in the early 80s here in the U.S.
What markets have you found particularly challenging, Bonnie?
Well, let's talk again about Japan, where the way business is done in Japan is very different from how business is done in the U.S., regardless of gender. Decisions are not usually made in meetings. There's a hierarchy of who's allowed to communicate and who's allowed to decide. And you have to study that and come to understand that you will be more successful and effective if you hold on to your concepts but integrate their business practice.
Hmm.
Until it interferes with the potential effectiveness or success. And then, you have to be courageous, and you have to say, we cannot do this work in this way. We can still do it with tremendous respect. I remember the first time that I had an opportunity to make a presentation to clinical research professionals in Japan. I was in Osaka at a business conference. And it was almost as if I was a novelty, that I was the first time that they had a female guest speaker at the Chamber of Commerce. Mm-hmm. And so you get the attention, and if you're able to deliver on the quality of your thinking and your experience, that will transcend gender. But it takes some work.
And I think as women overseas, we have to be especially sensitive. Debbie Baxley, who's been a guest on this show, is with Capgemini, and she spent several months in Dubai helping them implement a new payment system. And she was working for the government, but nobody would shake her hand. She was doing a lot of high-level work for them. But you have to be very careful. So let me shift topics. Clinical research and development costs are huge. And patient recruitment for clinical trials are a huge cost. You've written a book about reinventing patient recruitment. So how did BBK reinvent patient recruitment?
I think that's a nice summary of many of the things that we've talked about. The first is getting the message right. The next piece was doing the research to find where the patients were, and not just assuming that where the doctor is that's going to execute the research study is in alignment with where the patients are. And then understanding what the physician's motivation was. So there was this aggregation of little bits, or what you might call small bets, that you could place that would come to benefit you. And it was a complex, thoughtful process that needed to be dynamic. It was no longer about making a brochure and assuming a research physician was going to hand it out, and that would be enough.
What's the most revolutionary idea for the clinical trial process that you and Joan came up with, or that BBK came up with?
Maybe the very beginning of saying we can take our expertise in healthcare marketing and apply it in this pre-market segment of the pharmaceutical industry. Before we took our skills and moved them into this clinical R&D segment, it didn't exist.
I mean, let's shift ground a little bit. Talk about the role that technology and big data are playing in patient recruitment, because you really have quite an impressive technology infrastructure at BBK.
We do, and we continue to invest significantly in that out of our operations year upon year. So we have built a software system that manages the patient recruitment process. But we've also built software systems that help to manage our internal processes. Now we're doing more and more work in the area of mobile applications, and in fact have just signed a letter of intent to acquire a company that builds mobile apps. So
How does mobile apps fit into recruitment?
In a couple of different ways. Once you've signed on to participate in a clinical research study, there's all kinds of activities that you need to do as the research participant, from remembering to take your medications at certain times of the day or with or without food, to being prepared to come to physician visits, which in many cases can be 2, 4, 8 hours long and require fasting or, you know, other ways of being prepared. And so integrating these activities with your regular calendar, with your contacts list, is one way. We also can deliver educational messages to people who are participating in a study or who are considering or wanting to learn more about clinical research. Not everybody is going to know the difference between an ultrasound and an MRI.
No.
So in a mobile app, you can add in video links that will help to explain that, and take that effort perhaps off the researcher, but put it in a way that a potential patient can revisit it, share it with family members, etc.
cetera. I would think that having the mobile apps would be a tremendous help for recruiting in emerging markets as well as developed economies, given the really tremendous prevalence of mobile phones today. And we have countries where mobile phones outnumber toilets. And I would think that that would... not kidding.
Oh, I know. I just haven't packaged it that way before, so well, I'll borrow that one.
We do a number of shows in the payments field, and all the mobile apps are revolutionizing the entire payments industry.
Absolutely.
And
mm-hmm.
nowhere more so than Africa. So. Now, talk about how use of big data. And I have some interesting quote of yours where you thought that big data really needs to step aside for patient centricity.
I do believe that. I think that big data is a nice, catchy phrase and idea that may have more benefit in a post-approval market. But it really is something that drives the financial side of the insurance industry in the pharmaceutical and medical device sales. And it's not yet at the place where it actually has an impact on patient care. It allows us to study what's working or not working, but we're not there yet that we're actually changing our modalities based on the results of aggregated and consolidated data. So this is, I'd call patient centricity part of the evolution of the big data concept, because they're all, both can be about putting the patient at the center.
Okay.
Data is putting the patient at the center and coming to understand what they did. Patient centricity is coming to understand what they want and what they need.
A really interesting set of definitions. How is BBK structured today? Because this is a far different company than it was 30 years ago between the partnership.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A number of years ago, we took the step and created a holding company. We had, at that time, three different operating units that were sort of in parallel play, but did work collaboratively. One was a consulting firm that looked at the strategic issues around clinical research. The other was an advertising agency. And the third, the last one to be started in 2007, was the software company. And we spun that out from the consulting group. So after that happened, we created a holding company, and each of those three entities continues as part of the holding company. We had a subsidiary in Japan and a joint venture with that same one of our partners in Japan, which is different from the subsidiary. And so now we are a group of six different companies and soon to be seven.
You know, we are almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. Bonnie, where does BBK go from here? What's the next steps? I know you've got some rather exciting investment plans.
We do, and I mentioned one about the mobile business. And I think what will happen is that the wall that has existed between clinical research and development and the delivery of care is going to continue to come down. And that's primarily by virtue of technology and an improved understanding of patients. And so I think our work will be supporting the greater continuum of not just helping to accelerate the time to market for new medicines and treatments, but to help with patients integrating them into their day-to-day lives.
Honey, as a woman and as an entrepreneur in our closing seconds, what's the one most important takeaway for our listeners? What's the thing they could put into practice tomorrow?
Oh, I'm not sure those are the same thing.
Okay.
I think that the big takeaway for me is just do it. You have an idea. You can make it happen. It won't happen overnight. But don't lose sight of what it was that caused you to take this step or to take this risk.
And how can our guests find BBK?
You can find us online at www.bbkworldwide.com. And you can probably find us on Facebook and Twitter and any other form of social media you care to pursue.
Bonnie, thank you so much for being on BBK. I thought this was a really fascinating interview.
Thank you, Tay, and thank you for waiting the year to get us together to do this. I really enjoyed it.
And for my audience out there, if you want to suggest a topic or a guest for a future episode, let me know at trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Meanwhile, for my guest, Bonnie Bressy, and myself, we wish you great success in extending your global reach. Come back next week.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.